Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Are you feeling a bit animated? Well, come on over to the Wicked Anime Podcast on the Nerdy Show Network, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to animation, Japanese culture, and all things anime. With a true industry perspective, we're always diving deeper than school uniforms and tentacle monsters. Join us on the Wicked Anime Podcast, nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. It's Wicked A!
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I'm Brian, and I'm here with BJ.
Hey, what's up?
Jeff.
Hi.
Eric.
Hello.
And Pat.
What up?
So, in case you haven't really heard us before, which is always a possibility, we are a gay and geeky podcast, you know, mostly gay, and pretty much all geeky, and we're going to cover the pop culture, media, things that we've consumed in the last couple weeks. That's what we do. We have fun. Sometimes we go on random tangents, and it's all fun in post. But yeah, we're here, and we're mostly queer, so.
I like explaining it to virgins.
Yeah, you like that first time? So, as is our tradition, we're going to start with some news about the world of entertainment. And this is very interesting news, because specifically, one of the movies that we're very excited about, had a really good review, Microsoft, about a couple back in the feed, has some big news. That's Black Panther. Black Panther, for those of you who have not been paying attention, is now the highest grossing superhero movie in the world.
Who has not been paying attention?
I don't know. Some people. Maybe. $600 million in the U.S. and $1 billion. $1 billion in the world.
$1 billion.
You got to put the pinky up. You have to put the pinky up.
Mm-hmm. In the Theater of the Mind, he totally did. in the Theater of the Mind, he looks like, well, what the hell's the guy's name?
Dr. Evil.
Dr. Evil. I was about to say Captain Evil.
What? I'm like, what?
Captain Evil.
Captain Evil. So,
he didn't go to 6 years to medical school to be called Captain, thank you.
That's nice. I mean, I think this is just more validation that if you make a good movie, it's going to do really well. If you make a good movie with good representation, it's going to do even better.
Poor Wrinkle in Time.
Oh. Well, what's interesting about Wrinkle in Time is they gave the director of Wrinkle in Time, whose name escapes me, it's a she, they gave her a DC Fourth World movie. So I'm a little like,
oh. Really?
Yeah.
They appreciate her flair for style and presentation?
I guess.
Because you need all those cards with Fourth World.
Well, I mean, it helps. I'm a little nervous, I'll be honest, because I don't think Wrinkle in Time's done very well.
No, but
I mean,
then,
it's not okay.
See, I don't know. I look at a lot of movies like Ready Player One, which is going to come out this Friday,
yep.
Depending on when this launches.
A Spielberg movie that's rife with pop cultural references from the mostly 80s and 90s.
But
yeah,
I would,
mostly from the 80s.
With the amount of licensing that they've spent on that film to make it nostalgic and like all the different like properties that they want to reference in the film, because the book it's based on is very reference heavy for 80s nostalgia. The marketing has been like next to nothing.
Yeah, for like, and that's never a good sign.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
they debuted it at South by Southwest. It did amazing. I haven't heard anything bad review-wise. The only thing bad I've heard is that it sometimes relies too much on nostalgia, but it's still a really good movie. And yet, compared to like a Marvel movie, the marketing is minuscule.
Well, what's weird is every time we've been in the movies in the last 6 months, we've seen a trailer for it.
Right, yeah. But that's at the movies.
Right,
talking
no,
about
admittedly.
Your social media services, your YouTube, your places that most people see
the
advertising commonly.
Yeah.
It's just not there.
So I don't know. I don't know what to expect. But obviously Black Panther, which did also not get a lot of good marketing early. I mean, it got some. But for a Marvel movie, it was okay.
But yeah. It had the hype machine.
It got like regular marketing.
But the hype machine was there.
The hype machine with Black Panther was strong from the jump.
Sure.
Yeah.
Another thing in news that's, I guess, worth mentioning. Marvel's Infinity War got moved up a whole week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yay.
I never heard the reason for that. Did anybody hear the reason?
It was so it had a simultaneous worldwide release.
Oh, okay. Yep. So
Overseas was going to come out on April 27th, 28th, whatever the new date is. They were going to have to go a full week waiting for the U.S. release. And they didn't want a chance. Spoilers. They wanted to have a unified worldwide presentation of the film.
Because you know somebody somewhere is going to just fucking...
Everybody is.
Or if not that, Wikipedia is going to be like, we're just going to go ahead and post the plot right up here right now.
They're going to be blasting it on Facebook nonstop, like internet trolls.
So dies.
Exactly. Yeah.
I am impressed with the fact that when they released trailers for Thor Ragnarok, they digitally put his eye in there.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like even for the early trailers for Infinity War, he had both of his eyes.
Yeah, well, and there's some thing because like some different toy conventions have been releasing more pictures of the upcoming toys for Infinity War. There's like a minor plot spoiler where he does have two eyes, but one of them's like grayed out. So like maybe he'll get a robotic eye from Rocket Raccoon. Who knows?
Why from Rocket?
Because Rocket likes to steal people's amputated things.
Well, that's true.
It's hilarious. He's gonna wake up tomorrow and his eye's not gonna be where he thought it was. It's so funny.
Or he's going to put one where there was not one.
Booty eye.
So we have seen some movies, but not all of us have seen some movies. So we're going to skip over your favorite new movie releases for this
week. I read Annihilation, and I'm interested in it. I just have to be in the mood for something like that.
Yeah.
Eric, you saw it.
I did see it.
Well, I think maybe by the next time we meet or convene, we'll have seen more movies. But I am interested in that movie specifically.
What would you think?
It was beautiful to watch.
Who was the director? Director from Ex Machina did Annihilation? I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I believe so. And Natalie Portman, and then some other.
Oh, what's his name from
Oscar Isaac?
Yeah, Oscar Isaac.
But otherwise, it's a pretty like dominantly female.
Yeah,
cast.
The whole expedition that goes into the event, the Shimmer.
The Shimmer
is a female-only team.
And it's set in Florida, right?
They're swamplands, but
I think the book is for sure set in Florida.
Yeah, the book is for sure set in Florida. I just can't remember specifically where.
They don't really ever say in the movie.
Not important.
Yeah, it's not important.
Would you or would you not recommend?
It's kind of more of an existential movie than it is any sort of action movie.
Okay.
So you have to go in with that kind of mindset.
So more like, what the heck's the other?
What, The Fountain?
Well, The Fountain's one, but the more recent example. The Translation of the Aliens.
Oh, The Arrival?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
More like that.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like that.
That's but I'd say even
I
like
preferred The Arrival, though.
Yeah, like The Arrival also, like with the special effects, made it pretty good for theater watching. Would you say Annihilation's a good theater movie, or would you say it's like...
Because of some of the special effects, it's good. But I mean, as far as the story itself, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Well, that sounds like my favorite kind of movie. Existential sci-fi, so I will see it soon. All right, so let's move on. We'll talk more about Tomb Raider and Pacific Rim, hopefully. Soon. I do want to see Pacific Rim as well.
Yeah, I've heard some initial stuff from some review sites, and they're like, you know, the only thing that Pacific Rim is missing is the Guillermo del Toro touch.
Did del Toro not direct this?
I don't think so.
No.
Oh,
he executive produced, but he basically stepped away after the first one.
Oh,
yep.
Well, he's off making Fish Romance.
Oh, and you know what? That occurred to me. I did see a movie, which we don't have to talk about, but I finally saw Shape of Water.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I bought it on Blu-ray.
Is it out already?
Yep.
Holy crap.
Yep. Came out last Tuesday.
Why am I surprised by any of this? But yeah, that's good.
We should talk about it later. It's really good.
All right. All right. No worries. All right. So let's move on to TV. I know there's TV we've watched. There's
so much TV.
A lot of TV. So CW, of course, is the home where all the DC superhero shows. I think we're actually a little bit behind on Legends, a couple weeks.
Which they did announce. I don't know how recent this is, but Matt, what's his name? The guy who plays Constantine or played Constantine?
Yes.
Will be coming back as a series regular in season 4.
Sweet.
But did they pick up for season 4?
Yeah. Well,
officially?
Not officially, but CW has always been very giving with their shows, yeah. Especially the Arrowverse shows.
Yeah, I think they're fine. I mean,
Arrow is still on, so yeah. I think it's good.
Yeah.
I think everybody else is safe.
Flash, the last we saw, there was the big frozen time thing that was happening. You guys caught up? Do you care?
Oh, yeah.
Basically, there was a nuclear bomb that went off, and they kind of had to outrace the explosion. So it was like they'd frozen time, and every speedster had to kind of run around and try to, like, I guess there's a trick now where he can bring people into the Speed Force or, you know, have them run with him, so he effectively brings them out of frozen time.
Yeah, that was I can't remember if that was a Wally West thing in the books or if that was a Barry Allen thing, but definitely that is the Flash has had the ability. It's kind of to explain why he doesn't snap somebody's neck when he, like, grabs somebody by the back of the neck and starts running. That it's one of those weird, like, meta physics things that they kind of explain in the comics, like, one time. And they just haven't really explained it since then.
Yeah, and they don't really explain it in this very well. But, like, basically, it's a kind of a cool character, kind of a character study of each character's relationship with Barry and their relative abilities. I mean, it was an interesting episode. It was different than the normal episode, and it didn't exactly dovetail into the ongoing story of the Thinker, who, if you've been following, has been body shifting from one body to another. Playing with gender and some other stuff.
I like that whole movement from, like, his original body, and he's just kind of in this souped up wheelchair. I really like that plot device of him just kind of jumping bodies.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed Flash this season. At first I didn't, but I think I'm definitely enjoying it being different than the usual. Oh, what speedster villain is it this time?
And I definitely like it better than the last season.
Yeah, we don't watch Arrow. Do you guys watch Arrow?
That's completely on the back burner now. It's Netflix. When I'm bored during the summer and if I don't have anything else to watch, I'll just kind of binge it real quick.
Yeah, I've heard nothing good this season, last season, previous season. I need something better to actually come back on.
They're rehashing a lot of plot points. Like, everybody knows he's Green Arrow. Everybody doesn't know he's Green Arrow. Everybody knows he's Green Arrow. And I'm just like, okay.
He's the mayor. He's a father. He's got so many irons like the comics, in the fire.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we started Black Lightning.
I started too.
I'm enjoying it so far. I'm current on it.
I liked it. I mean, yeah. I like what I've seen. I just have to get back to it.
Yeah. I like that they haven't just, like, brought it right into the big picture of everything else. I like that it's separate and they're spending the time to kind of build its own thing.
Yeah.
That, I think, like, the longer you can keep that until, like, whenever big event merges them, the better.
Well, supposedly it's in the shared universe with Supergirl is what I read the other day.
Okay.
Oh.
But they originally said they weren't going to cross it over, so who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I am happy it exists and I enjoyed it. The only thing that took me out of it is seeing Kim Cattrall's boyfriend from Sex and the City show up. And with that weird mustache,
was also Dexter's dad in Dexter.
Yeah, no. I know he's been in a lot of different things.
And, and he was in the freaking The Warriors from the 70s. That was the first thing I ever saw him in.
Was
he
in that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He was Ajax.
I did not know that. It's one of those moments when you see an actor you know and he just pulls you out. The wife or ex-wife of the main character is from Doctor Who.
Yep.
So every time I see her, I'm a little like, okay. But I mean, overall, it's a great show. It's got lesbians. I mean, it's good. It's fun.
It's got all the things.
Right.
It's got lesbians. It's got
lesbians.
It's representation. I'll take it. You know,
it's got guys with lightning and then albino guys without lightning.
Very attractive. not middle aged, but slightly older. African American hero. I mean, muscly.
Oh no.
With a straight up neon sign strapped to his chest.
Admittedly,
he can shock it. Any day of the week.
He is a specialist with the shocker.
the last episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we saw, and I know there have been more, was when they basically go back to the current time. So we have not seen anything past that.
I'm only one episode past that, but I'm just kind of slowly meandering through some episodes. I'm about halfway through the one after that. You remember, like, the most emotionally impactful episode of last season? I think it was the episode where they come out of the framework.
Yes.
Yeah. So supposedly the next two or three episodes after they get back it's that. So just go ahead and get your tissues clench everything because emotionally they're going in dry. And it's somebody said that it completely makes this season, that it just like it's the best writing of any other season. But at the same time, they're like, but it's going to hit you hard.
Okay, but, so having a tertiary knowledge of the show this season, so wibbly wobbly timey wimey, how the fuck did they manage to go back if the whole reason they were in the future is because they were like frozen?
Weren't they? Frozen. No, just Fitz.
And they just unfroze him?
Yeah, Fitz took
in the future.
Fitz took the long way around.
Yeah, he was the centurion, but yeah, taking him back, they went through the monolith again.
Okay, yeah. So but then like when they got back, they just defrosted him, and wouldn't that undo?
No, they didn't defrost him.
He's still frozen?
Yeah, there'd have to be a version of him frozen. Yeah, you're right.
So he's stuck cryogenically frozen from now on?
That's a good question.
Because otherwise that would undo everything that happened to get them
back. Yeah, I don't know how they mention that?
Future fucking!
Not yet, but supposedly, there's something super weird with Fitz that they're supposed to reveal. And I think the episode's called The Devil's Paradox.
Oh, well,
or something
there you
like
go.
The Devil's Three
Way. Or The Devil's Details, or something like that.
Well,
the Eiffel Tower. What? The Golden Rule? There, what are the names for it?
And they're supposed to... they're also
Satanic
supposed
Spit Roast?
Yes.
There you go.
They're supposed to... That's a good band name. They're supposed to also talk about... remember last season, the Ghost Rider went into Coulson.
Ghost Rider.
And there was... he apparently had to make some sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to mention that.
A Faustian bargain, if you will.
Yes.
I see.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'm excited to get back to S.H.I.E.L.D. We got to sit down and do it. Voltron has come back for what? How many seasons are they up to
this now? Is season 5.
It was so good.
I thought that there's not many more seasons left. They kind of capped it, didn't they? Like 5 or maybe 6 and then they're done?
As far as I know, I mean, because this one was another slightly shortened one. I think this one was like 7 or 8, like the last season. But the story is reaching, it's moving towards some sort of conclusion.
Climax.
But the thing, and I've talked to Brian about this a little bit, the thing that I love about it is that the original Voltron was essentially, by today's standards, a skeletal frame of a show, where it's just like, bad guy, good guys.
Excuse to join forces and fight.
Go Voltron. Like, you
sell action figures.
And this one, they've just completely opened it up. They explain, like, Zarkon used to be a paladin. They explain, like, how Voltron was built, why it was built. They explain who Lotor's mother is, because they never really explained that in the original show. And that's kind of a big reveal, so I won't tell you who that is. But there's just a whole backstory that they have built, and it literally took one episode of one character just kind of
rehashing,
just kind of in recovery remembering things. And then also, surprise, one of the current paladins is not entirely human, so that's a big reveal as well. So it's the writing has gone from kind of that, like, you know, Avatar-ish Legend of Korra silliness is still there, but there's now a better equilibrium of the humor and like the drama of it.
I think that's what took me out of, because I never got through the whole first season on Netflix, just because there were so many silly moments, even in the midst of a serious moment.
Yes.
And then what's his name from Flight of the Conchords was,
oh yes,
Reese Darby.
Reese Darby. And it was just like, oh god, I can't unsee you singing Leggy Blonde.
Oh, Jesus.
But it's
talking about those fucking vampires, you know, and he's a werewolf from What We Do in the Shadows.
Need to see.
Oh my god.
I keep seeing clips of it. I need to just sit down and watch it.
I know. They're making a TV show. It's so good.
Of course they are. So we were up in Charlotte last week for a curling tournament, and one of our new friends is a fanfic writer of some renown.
Yes.
What? I think her nom de plume is Melly Jelly.
Yes, that's correct.
And what fic does she fan?
Well, I think she does a lot of them, but I know she mentioned the Voltron fic shipping.
Boy. Yeah.
What were the ships that she mentioned? Do you remember? You were more into
Was it something like Hunk Krantz?
So who would that be?
That would be Keith and Lance.
Okay.
I can see it.
Who else? I don't remember. Well, there was the Hunk guy, or what's his name?
Well, I proposed.
Oh, you proposed.
Yeah. Between Hulk and Shiro.
Oh. But
I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm down.
Well, while we're on the anime tip, you know what just aired their last episode of their show?
Dragon Ball Super.
Dragon Ball Super.
Yeah,
so did they actually end it?
Like, no, of course not. They're coming out with a movie.
Oh, okay.
And then there's pretty heavy talk that they're going to do a follow-up show, whatever the next show is, but they ended Super.
Yeah. Okay.
So now's the time where I'm going to catch up.
Yay!
On the whole series,
it was absolutely phenomenal.
I heard they had a weird like side story about food at a certain point in like the high 70s or 80s episode, and the animation I heard also like at the beginning because they didn't have a good studio at their disposal. They had to kind of cut corners. A lot of the animation was like kind of like the new Berserk series. Did anybody see the new Berserk series that came out a few years ago?
No.
It was very CG reliant.
Yeah.
And they kind of filled in the gaps that way. But I heard it got way better animation after like maybe like the first handful of episodes.
That happened with the Sailor Moon reboot too.
Yeah, Crystal.
Yeah.
Okay, it happened with Crystal.
It's weird because you feel like by now they'd have really good high quality animation techniques, but
it's
I think
a matter
they still
of,
outsource a lot of it.
They do.
There's certain studios will like do like
or
catch
China.
Up.
Yeah.
Well, there's like with My Hero Academia, apparently they found a way to kind of keep the animation at the same quality. And I can't remember what it was, but it was something where they like rotate out. It's like a third party group.
Right.
And they just keep rotating them out. And that way it's like you just have a contractual thing where you just pay them the same.
Yeah.
And you just have a rotation of
well, that
artists.
Way you can stack production on top of each other,
so you never have a downturn in episode.
Right.
Yeah, because the animation in My Hero Academia, it's from the first episode till the end of season two, which season three starts back I think next
April.
Month.
Yeah,
it's nonstop. There's no lag in it whatsoever.
I know Naruto always saved the good animators for like the better episodes or like the more important episodes. Otherwise, they would farm that shit up like everywhere.
So someone told me that Cardcaptor Sakura is back.
Yes.
And I have not seen it. And I never finished the original. Not that I probably need to, but you know.
Clear Card. Cardcaptor Sakura.
That's
clear
what it's
card.
Called?
Yep.
Yeah.
Is it sponsored by American Express? Yeah, I'm excited. I need to find where you can watch all of it online. And because I won't watch it until I can watch all of it.
That's my issue with Dragon Ball right now. Like first search after I read the final episode, like where do I watch all of Dragon Ball Super? Have a subscription to Funimation or Crunchyroll, depending on where in the world you live.
Yeah.
I think it might be on Hulu. Double check.
I checked. Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball GT are on Hulu. No Z and no Super.
Dragon Ball's fine.
Dragon Ball's okay.
But Dragon Ball is almost
hot garbage.
You could probably ask a million of the teenage fanboys from like the early 2000s who were big Dragon Ball Z fans. None of them have gone back and watched Dragon Ball.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just because
they'd want to.
No, there's no point. They got on Z. Yeah. There's no reason to go backwards and see Goku as a kid.
I don't know. I thought that was good. I liked it.
You see enough of Dragon Ball in the flashbacks in Dragon Ball Z.
That's true.
You get the essentials. Piccolo used to be bad. Then he was not as bad. Then he was good.
Next on the list, we have Santa Clarita Diet. Did that come back for more episodes?
It did. This past Friday.
Yeah.
Already most of the way through the second season. It's still really freaking funny.
Yeah.
Timothy Oliphant is nothing like his Justified character. He is so over the top and funny.
I just want more of that character, though.
Best thing. There have been like guest appearances throughout the episodes from like from Deadwood character actors.
Oh,
Justified actors have shown up.
Nice,
really.
Gerald McRaney was in the last episode we just watched.
Oh yeah,
and I'm watching it at first, and it didn't click, and I was like, oh my god. It just occurred to me about season three of Deadwood and how funny this scene is now.
do they do it, a lot of inside jokes?
No.
No, okay.
No. They keep it to just the show. But it's just, as a big fan of Deadwood, watching that and just seeing that as, like, as Hearst and Bullock, but in an entirely different, like, they have a tango moment where they actually, yeah, it's so gory and funny and like just not appropriate. It would be a hard R-rated show if it was on any kind of network.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's all, both seasons are on Netflix, so I'd say definitely watch it.
I do want to. Another Netflix show that we've been watching is Joel McHale Show.
It's really good.
AKA The Soup.
Is it The Soup?
Oh, yes, it's totally The Soup. Oh,
okay. Mankini's even in there, although now he's Man One Piece or something like that.
One Piece Man? No. But yeah, it's ridiculous. It is totally the show. But they, I don't even know what they've changed. I mean, it's a new set. It's a new production. It's very Netflix tongue-in-cheek.
They have a set now?
As much of a set as they had before.
It's like Tasha's set. I mean, it's...
But the joke they keep referencing in all the episodes, I haven't seen the last two, but the guy who directed the new Ghostbusters and also directed...
Paul Feig.
Paul Feig. Oh. Was he a producer on the original suit?
I don't know if he's a producer, but he showed up a lot towards the end.
Yeah, he was involved with it, I know.
Because
he
is there in the studio audience making constant jokes, in-jokes and all that stuff, like, for all the episodes.
It's an interesting pairing, but yeah... It's weird. I don't know.
I need a palate cleanser show.
It's a good palate cleanser.
I know.
And it's weekly.
That up.
Like you only get the new episode for each week. You never can. It's not possible to binge watch that show.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I'm very happy it's back. That it exists. We did start Jessica Jones. I know people are going to ask us about our review for that, but I think we're going to wait until we've all finished Jessica Jones, and then we'll probably have a micro of some kind to discuss it. But so far, it's been good.
My wife is moving steadily along. I haven't started that yet.
If you like the first show, you'll probably like the second show.
I really, really like this season. I didn't expect to because it always worries me when they're supposed to do one season. And then they're like, we're doing another. And I'm like, but why, though? Just leave it alone.
So would you have preferred if they had done like one season of each of the Defenders and then done all new characters for like a second run?
I would have... Actually, probably. I would have...
Like, constantly cycle out?
Because I know, like, Dr. Voodoo at one point is...
Whoa. He got killed off in Doctor Strange, though.
Yeah.
He did?
Spoiler. Yeah! Jericho Drum was the New York Master of the Mystic Art. The one who shows, like, when Mads Mikkelsen shows up at the New York...
Oh, I didn't realize that.
They'd say, Jericho, and, like, it's Jericho Drum, and then, they kill him.
Yeah, maybe.
Well,
it's Dr. Voodoo. So
maybe in this one, his brother is alive, and he's
the
dead one.
There you go. I think what I would have preferred is not... I'm fine they're doing more seasons, because that does give you a chance to tell more of their story, but the pairings. Like, I would have liked to have seen Jessica and Luke. And Luke and Danny and like the pairings.
What's his name? Guy who plays Luke is going to get lots of money. He's like, I'm the guest star, or like the half primary star on all of the second seasons of the show.
I mean, would that be okay?
Yeah, he's Rosario Dawson for this run of.
And that is interesting. There is no Rosario Dawson so far in this series.
Well, all I really want is a Heroes for Hire miniseries.
Which I think you're getting. I think that was like the second season of Luke was going to be with, what's his name from Iron Fist showing up.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a Heroes for Hire, like two-parter or something.
Yeah.
Well, so far it's been good. Now, other shows on other networks include Ash vs. Evil Dead, which I have not been watching.
I finally...
So good.
I binge-watched and got through all of season two. I never finished season two when it aired, and now I'm caught up, but I haven't watched season three yet. Because I've been watching it on Netflix.
Well, they have a new show, completely new showrunner. I guess they booted the old showrunner because the season two ratings dipped a lot.
I think this first season was a lot clearer focus. Season two, once he got back to his hometown, kind of meandered.
Yeah.
Especially when it was like no clear cut. The Ball, the main guy, wasn't introduced yet. And there was a plot point with his dad. And that kind of built some time on the possessed car. And then... I don't know. I could see that. I could see why they might want to like hit a reset button.
It was muddled, but no, I absolutely love this season. He has a daughter, a teenage daughter he didn't know about. Ruby's back. Bad Ruby's back.
Oh yeah.
That's
Lucy Lawless character.
Yeah, no, I was thinking. I was like
late 80s attire. Like it's
giant shoulder pads.
Yes, with all the shoulder pads,
patent leather.
Super witchy. The whole scene, everybody, and they're actually going to mention, apparently there's one or two references to Army of Darkness.
I mean, they flat out pointed it out in season two.
Yeah, they pointed out in season two, but like, there's actually some major plot points that they're going to touch on, so.
Oh, good.
Yeah, everybody's doing all the things, and I'm only about three episodes in, but so far it's absolutely amazing.
I overlooked one Netflix series that I know Pat really enjoys and he introduced to me. Have you guys seen Nailed It?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
It's so funny. It's a cooking competition between amateur bakers that's basically Pinterest fails.
Nice.
Well, isn't Nailed It a series somewhere?
Is it a mockumentary or is it a documentary?
No, it's a competition show.
But so
it's based off of the internet meme of recreating baked like treats in different styles, and then the people who just fuck it all up, and it's the whole nailed it. and hosted by Nicole Byer. It feels very much like a YouTube series, but with the production of Netflix behind it.
Hmm.
And
it doesn't sound like a good selling point.
No. It looks like a very well put together show that you'd see on Food Channel, but in a very irreverent way.
Well, and Nicole Byer hosts it, who's absolutely hilarious. I love her.
I feel like there's an echo in here. Does Nicole Byer host it?
Okay, I'll go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Who's Nicole Byer?
I don't know actually. What's she from? Do you know?
She's a comedian. What show does she do? I know she has her own. She has her own.
Exactly, Lucy Nicole.
Okay,
that's the one that was on MTV, and then she was on was it Girl Talk?
Yeah.
Girl Code. That was it.
I first was introduced to her on Drag Race because she was a judge on All Stars.
Oh wow! Totally missed or forgot.
And then I was sitting home one day and just happened to turn on Netflix, and I was like, what is this? And needed something to just kind of nod off to and just laugh my ass off. I mean, it's to the point where when she and Jacques, the French pastry and chocolatier.
Jacques Torres.
Just Jacques.
Jacques.
You leave the last S off for savings. They have a guest judge with them the entire time, and when they go to the different like contestants and see these marvelous recreations, half the time they just bust out laughing in their faces, and it gets to the point where she's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh in your face, but I totally did. Like, I did it for everybody else, I'm just gonna laugh in your face too. And it's only 6 episodes. Each episode runs about 30 minutes, so it's not like a long binge to go through them all. Mm. I feel like it's one of those where they filmed like a full 12 or 13 episodes and then only dropped half of it to kind of see how the reaction would be, and then they'll probably not long down the road drop the rest of the episodes, because there's the one guy, I can't remember his name, bald-headed, glasses, very, very fancy Frenchman that's on like some of the other like chocolatier shows. He is shown in the opening credits as a guest judge, and we haven't seen that. And there's a couple of different cake designs and things that they show that aren't in these first 6 episodes. So I'm excited to see when they drop more episodes from this.
Jay from Broken Lizard.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up as a guest judge.
Oh, Who Wants a Mustache Ride?
Yep. Yeah, okay. I do. Yeah, he's in it. Although they do this weird bit where he runs off to pick up his
kid. I don't
think
it was a bit.
I
know. No, I think a lot of this is just they leave in all of
I think it's just a rough hot edges. Mess of a show.
I think that is like definitely it. The design, and I'm kind of interested to know if it is a bit or not. I really do. Because
I really feel like that
he comes
was...
back with coffees and makes a joke about him, so it's like, well, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you're filming a show and you have to get up and leave in the middle of it, I kind of feel like you would have to bring coffee back.
I don't know. I'm just curious because it was such a weird, random thing to do that we're like, wait, what is this?
I mean, the little Sylvia, the first guest judge.
Oh my
the
god,
old lady
when
she goes
amazing.
And fucking steals a pan out of the pantry.
She's amazing. I didn't know she was good, for real.
We got good equipment here. I'm gonna take some of this home.
Oh my god! So
if you're gonna steal, steal big.
The one right? You gotta watch is that one with Jay, because it's the one where they do a Trump cake. That was it. That was that one.
Yeah, that was the last. That was the 6th episode of this.
Oh boy. It's
you should check the credits. Maybe he directed it, because he's also pretty. He directs a lot of stuff.
It wouldn't shock me if. And there's like people like affiliated with the show that I feel like have done other things that are anyway. It's you got to watch it. It's really great.
Okay.
Real quick, did you want to mention that other show you watched that you finished just the other day? It was interesting. The end I saw.
I ended up going through the entire first season of Everything Sucks.
We started it.
And really? I watched that.
If you are a If you went to high school in the mid-90s, they are, I think, 1 year younger than my high school.
Oh,
like,
no.
Because I think that... I want to say that they're freshmen in 1996.
Wow.
Oh,
okay.
No.
Yeah.
And it's just...
That's pretty much bullseye.
Yeah, that's right around. That's yeah.
Yeah, I was 95 to 99.
It looked very dry. Is it dry? Like kind of.
It is. And honestly, the first like 2 episodes were so nostalgia-packed that I think I was kind of like, all right, this is better or more like, I don't know. It's not a bad show. It's not a bad show at all. And actually, towards the end, it picks up a lot. But the middle episodes were really kind of dry for me. And it was a little tough to get through. And it's more just kind of putting my head down. They're only like 30-minute episodes as well. So it's not having to sit through an hour for each episode. But it is coming of age. It has like the male lead is a young black kid. You have
is there any other like queer representation? I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I mean part of the whole thing is that the Luke, who is the main character, they drop you into the show after the first week of school. So they're freshmen and they're going to their second week.
It's like
they
join him and two friends are like, we're going into high school.
And they're in the film club. AV club.
They joined the AV club,
Oh, I thought you got this.
I didn't watch it.
I was like, y'all.
All I want to talk about is the crazy movie they make. That was ridiculous.
Oh, the music video?
No, a movie. They do a film.
What happened in the movie?
Well, you saw the whole thing. I don't want to, you know.
Yeah, the principal's daughter turns out to be a lesbian.
Oh, okay. And that was one of the ones that was watching the movie there and like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's the one that the black kid also develops a crush on. And asks out with a giant gesture of making a music video in front of the entire school.
Oh, no.
And there's already rumors going around that she was, but she agrees to that as to kind of counteract it because she's not ready to have that all. She's not ready to make her life a living hell.
So. Shocker.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But you really liked it, Pat?
You didn't talk about the movie.
Well, no, I want you to talk about it because you saw the whole sequence. I kind of dipped in and out.
No, I mean, overall, it was good. I mean, it's an interesting take on a coming-of-age thing. You have more diversity. You have more people of color. You have more queer representation. And, yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, it leaves off with not a cliffhanger. I mean, you expect what is going to happen because they kind of have almost a post-credit scene. That's not a post-credit scene because credits don't happen yet. But, you know, it sets up for season two. And I enjoyed it. By the end of the episodes, I was in.
The movie we were referring to is this sci-fi, what was it, Intergalactic Lust or something?
Ooh.
Like, it's one of these that they were trying to make a really cheesy film, and watching this segment felt like watching The Disaster Artist, because I think it's intentionally bad and low budget, because that's all they could do, but it had that moment of the director stepping out, just... He couldn't believe people weren't reacting the right way or the way he thought they should react. And anyway, it's a cool sequence. That's the part I really watched, and I was like, oh, this is neat. So it reminded me of Freaks and Geeks a little bit. Like, if you like Freaks and Geeks,
yeah,
I can see this being...
The trailer, when I watched the trailer, I was like, oh, it's Freaks and Geeks, but like a little bit further into the 90s.
Yeah, because Freaks and Geeks was set in the mid-90s too. I remember relating to that a lot. But
I watched Undeclared more than I watched Freaks and Geeks. Undeclared was...
You chose poorly.
I did.
Did anybody watch the X-Files reboot? I watched, I think, one or two of the new ones, and I guess it just wrapped. They actually had a finale that is shocking, according to what I've read on the internet, but I'm kind of scared because Chris Carter wrote it, and you know how that goes.
I've never watched an episode of X-Files in my life.
Oh, shut up then.
No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, if you're ever bored, go back and watch the first seasons. They're a hoot.
No, actually, there's a curated list you can find of good X-Files that you should at some point maybe experience, because it is a good show. It's set a lot of tone for a lot of other things.
Is that the list of episodes that actually have aliens in them?
No, well, not all
of
them.
Or the overarching...
Who were the two? No, who
because
the
there's
two
some
writers?
That are awful.
Well, there were two writers that
Darren
went on.
Darren Morgan.
They went on, did their own show with The Lone Gunman.
And
Vince Gilligan, I thought was also a writer. But like, I don't know if those were like the main two that did The Lone Gunman show.
Nah, I don't remember that either. Because there was producers that spun off, and yeah.
But was like, there a crossover with that show Millennium?
Yes.
Yeah, because it was like a right around the X-Files really catching fire. They wanted to have another show. But much more
about
focused.
The apocalypse. And
well, it started out as just like a 2000s. Serial killer hunter who could kind of like, it's the old Thomas Harris, like, I can feel what the killer feels, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
But then they went like hardcore into like apocalyptic prophecies because it was coming up on the year 2000 and Millennium and this whole, I don't know.
I love that show. I love Frank Black or Lance Henriksen.
Lance Henriksen.
I'm a fan. But
I have preferred the Willennium to the Millennium.
Absolutely not,
Jesus
sir.
H. Christ.
Absolutely
How dare you.
Not.
The fuck did you just say?
I think that's chop worthy. I'm okay bringing that back.
I think he said he wanted to go to Miami.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what would he say if I got there? What would be the first thing he said if I got to Miami? I'm just curious.
Miami is nice.
No?
Miami is nice.
He wouldn't say, Miami bienvenidos nice. A Miami.
Oh, no. I think those are all the shows. I may have missed
them. I mean, there's tons, but like...
Oh, The Expanse is coming back, by the way. And that is a great show that I love. It is coming back. There have been little snippets of the third season.
Season 2 ended great.
Oh, my God. I don't... So I've been asking friends of mine who've read the book series, like, okay, so where are they? What's going on? And kind of asking a little bit for spoilers of what's... Like, where is it going? It's so...
Are they still in the middle of book two, technically? Or, like, they passed book two?
I think someone said they're barely past book one.
Well, because, like, book one ended halfway through the second season.
Oh, yeah. But like, they're also bringing in stuff from later books that they just wanted to do earlier.
You know what? It actually sounds a lot like what they did with The Magicians.
Which... Quick shout out! I'm loving the season.
Season's ridiculous.
I need to catch up.
But like, yeah, no, they ended the first book of The Magicians in like episode 4 of season 2, and it was
I could see that because the cliffhanger for season 1 was just like everybody's dead or almost dead. See you next season.
Yeah.
Well, I am excited about The Expanse more than The Magicians, but I need to watch both because they're both good.
And what's her name? From The Guild.
Felicia Day.
She shows up like halfway through season 3.
In The Magicians?
Yes.
Yeah.
And she's great.
I mean, she's Felicia Day.
But she's I like her more because she's more morally ambiguous in this one than any other character I've ever seen her play.
Yeah, she gets typed very bubbly. And
that's why I liked her in Supernatural. That's what kept me in Supernatural for the season. Like, I was waiting for the Felicia Day episodes before they killed her off, and I was like, yes.
And now you're waiting for the Scooby-Doo episode.
I am waiting for the Scooby-Doo episode.
So, we don't normally talk about music in the show, and it's not on the list, but I must specifically call out the fact that there is a new Squirrel Nut Zippers album out.
What? I heard that.
Beasts of Burgundy. I think that's right.
What's his name? Didn't come back, right?
Who?
The guy who sang on...
Maxwell, yeah. I think? No, Malthus. And so, this is the same lineup we saw when we went to see them live around Christmas. They did like a Christmas tour. Man, they got a new female vocalist.
Oh, she didn't come back either?
No, Waylon didn't come back. I forgot her, the new one's name, but I'll tell you right now, it's a great album. It's a kind of a concept album of sort of like the carnival atmosphere and dipping into the supernatural. And
okay. I saw it was like a voodoo-styled cover.
Yeah, voodoo-ish. I mean, they definitely do touch on like New Orleans and that kind of stuff, but... If you're a fan of Squirrel Nut Zippers, you're gonna love the album because it's a lot of the stuff that they really did well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're like, oh, I'm tired of that, I don't want to hear that again, or you mistaken them for Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, which is unfortunately not uncommon, or Zoot Suit Riot, then
not
the Cherry
Poppin'
Daddy.
The band was called the Cherry Poppin' Daddies.
If you mistake them for other one hit wonders of that era, of which Squirrel Nut Zippers is not a one-hit wonder, I would posit, then you may not love it as much. But I really enjoyed it.
Suit Riot. Fuck off.
Yeah. No, seriously, like, they got lumped into those other bands, but they really weren't that. But they sounded somewhat like it in certain small ways. And it was the wave they were riding to get, you know, very good attention. But, I mean, their musicianship, like, blows all of those other ones out of the water.
Yeah, I'd say,
seeing them live was amazing.
Because, our friend Jake introduced... That was where I first saw. Had you seen them before Jake brought them down?
Our friend Jake from high school, I think he gave me or lent me the first album, The Inevitables.
Yeah, and from that was still, like, a good couple of years prior to, like, the big swing movement.
Yeah. And, Early.
And, yeah, I don't associate, like... Big Bad Voodoo Daddy has its place with big horns, but... Squirrel Nut Zippers doesn't have a big horn.
No, they do. Well, it's less of a horn line. It's different, yeah.
Yeah.
But the big difference is they do more blues and southern jazz, whereas the other ones are more just swing band kind of standards.
And I'd say maybe Squirrel Nut Zippers, at least from the last few albums that I've heard, were like only a stone's throw away from something like a Zydeco kind of feel.
In a lot of ways, yeah. Again, it's that southern heritage that they kind of play off of. So I don't know. If you're a fan of that, you got to go check it out. Video games. I've been playing a whole lot, but evidently there is this thing called Sea of Thieves.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
I've heard nothing, but I don't know what the gameplay is like or anything. But so many people I know are playing it right now.
It came out on Tuesday. It is Xbox's big release for the spring summer, I guess. I mean, they don't have a lot of first party titles, but this is a massively multiplayer online pirate sim.
You had me at pirates.
It's first person. It's since it's an Xbox release or Microsoft release, when you buy one version, you get it on both the Xbox One and on the PC.
Oh.
And it is cross-play compatible, so nice. You're playing with each other on both systems. Because of that, they have integrated Xbox controls, but also keyboard support if you want to use a keyboard and mouse. But they've also taken the weapons so that everybody, like, there's no disadvantage for a controller player versus a mouse and keyboard player.
Oh, nice.
The big thing, too, is that Rare made the game.
Wow. What? They're still doing stuff?
They're still doing stuff.
Where's my new Banjo-Kazooie?
It's called Yooka-Laylee, and it's out on Steam. They've done what they can, for better or for worse, to cut down on player toxicity potential. So,
in a pirate game.
In an MMO in general.
I know. I'm just kidding.
So, for example, everybody, no matter what level you are, no matter how far you progress in the game, everybody starts with the same items at the same power, and that never changes. So everybody starts with a sword and a pistol. You can change that out to a shotgun or a sniper rifle. But level 25 people versus level 1 people have the same powered weapon. So you're never going to play and level up your weapons. You're going to do missions. You're going to earn gold and all that. All that's going towards is cosmetic upgrades.
Okay.
So you can get an eye patch, you can get a pair of pants, you can get a jacket, you can get some custom sails for your ship. But all that's going to do is give you a different look versus a different, like a more powerful anything. Right now, the big complaint with the game is that it's not very deep. Mm-hmm. There's like three types of missions you can go on. You're either going and hunting for buried treasure, or you're going and killing a horde of skeleton pirates, then you have to kill their captain and bring the captain's skull back. Or you have to go find some chickens or pigs on an island and bring them back to their merchants.
Okay, so that's like it potentially could be suffering from what I like to call the Destiny 1 protocol.
Or No Man's Sky.
Or No Man's Sky.
And that's the thing, like the water physics in the game are gorgeous. If you play it on a high-end PC or you play it on Xbox One X, like the rendering is amazing and the ship mechanics to sail are really good. So they have the base level there to build off of and put out updates and more mission types and like different things that you can do. Everywhere on the map when you play is PvP. There's no save point. Oh. So even if you're going to like you have a treasure chest and you're just bringing it back to claim your reward or like the skull or whatever, if you're at the person, the NPC, to turn in the stuff, you could get ganked by somebody or shot in the back of the head. They'll steal it and then they'll do it.
Wow.
So it's very much nowhere is safe. It's a pirate game, so expect pirate shit. That being said, it's really fun, and you can do it two ways. You can do it in a group of up to, like, I think 4 or 5 people on a team.
So you can have, like, a crew.
Yeah, or you can do one person. You can do solo missions. But it's just this idea that, like, nowhere is safe, so you'll never see a sail off, like, the coast and think, hey, I'll go start a conversation with them. Maybe they're friendly. And like, no, chances are anybody that interacts with you is going to kill you or try to kill you. But yeah, it's great. There's Kraken appearances in the ocean.
Oh,
they
nice.
Could you have to battle a Kraken with your pirate ship. The combat mechanics are fun with the pirate ships. Like they're very I haven't heard they're really similar to Black Sails, but like the shooting mechanic, like wind is very important. So a sea battle is a lot of times dictated by who has the wind in their favor, and you can aim your ship sails to catch the wind versus not. Like, it's just fun. You can explore sunken shipwrecks and get treasure that way. Sharks will eat you if you're in too deep of water. You can blast yourself out of a cannon if you want to, like,
die.
No, if you want to board somebody else's ship in the midst of a battle, you can shoot yourself over there and land on their ship. You can shoot yourself to an island if, like, or you can also do like these fort raids where like the skeletons control a fort. You have to try and seize it. It's fun. It's just like I said. Like the big complaint right now because it just came out a couple days ago is that it doesn't have a lot of depth.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what big wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Yet, but everybody that wants to stick around is hoping that Rare will put out meaty updates that give a lot more to the game. So yeah, that's Sea of Thieves.
All right, so our other big video game news was that a teaser trailer got dropped by Nintendo for Super Smash Brothers featuring heavily the characters from Splatoon. And I love the fact that there is almost a giant debate online as to whether or not this means new Smash Brothers or port of Smash Brothers or potentially an ultimate edition, adding everything up from the last main console, the DS games, and potentially some new stuff, because obviously we're seeing Breath of the Wild Link.
Yeah, I was going to say Breath of the Wild Link's there.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, when you see Splatoon and you see Breath of the Wild, I'm like, okay, pretty sure we're getting something new. But it caused quite a stir, and I think it's about time, and it'll be great to see Smash Brothers show up on a system that is built for linking up and having like massive co-op like gameplay,
like other than Splatoon and Mario Kart.
Yeah, I like, mean
the, like I'm that was one of the things I was excited about, is because I actually like,
well, because it, yeah, definitely, and it takes their previous, okay, bring your DS over and you know you can link up and make it a controller. It makes this a bit different and a bit more portable in the sense, so it's looking like it's going to be pretty fun. Once we get more info, we'll obviously talk more about it, and
I think there's two big reasons why it's probably a port. It's coming out this year. They said 2018. And the fact that Sakurai has gone on record about the Wii U game almost killing him with getting it out when it did, it's like, I find it hard to believe they could come up with a whole new engine that quickly. Where they've been putting out DLC on this Wii U and the 3DS one. So Cloud, Bayonetta, Ryu from Street Fighter. Like, they had a pretty good amount when the game first came out of new characters.
Forgot about Bayonetta.
Problem is, every time they came out with a new character, it was, like, game-breaking. Like, a lot of people that do competitive play say Bayonetta's pretty broken. Like, she could...
Oh, no, she is.
Cloud, I've heard, is almost as bad because of how easy anybody could pick him up and then whoop ass on experienced fighters. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it would be a port. But that being said, it's a great game to port if they did. Like, it had 8-man eight-man battle, which was brand new to Smash at the time. That would take full advantage of the Switch capabilities with linking up and playing a whole bunch of people at once.
Yeah.
They need more stages for 8-man play, but...
I mean, and that's where, you know, you could have, the Breath of the Wild stages. Jesus, there's so many things they could do.
Yeah.
And then there's also this unreleased the Metroid game, the next Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah.
Coming out.
One that so far they've only shown as like a logo.
Yeah, just the logo, so like a little snippet teaser, but I would like it, cuz it's been a hot second since I've played Super Smash Brothers.
And Smash port or new, I'll be happy if it sticks to this year's release date.
True.
All right, so before we get into comics, let's take a minute to shill for our corporate overlords. If you are enjoying Flame On, you like what we do, and you want to help support us, head on over to patreon.com/nerdyshow, and you can help support The Nerdy Show. You can help support any of their shows individually, including us. If you would like to earmark some of those dollars to come directly to us, make sure you put it in the notes. There is plenty of great stuff for you to experience being a patron. We're actually going to be putting some more Patreon exclusive stuff going up very soon. It may be Oral going off on a 10-minute tangent about Shangela being robbed in the All-Stars finale that I completely cut out of the recap because...
Not unlike the RuPaul producers, did you cut out Shangela?
Pretty much.
Oh, boy.
Pretty much. But go on and be a patron. Patreon.com/nerdyshow. You can also find us online, all of the social medias. We are a somewhat presence on all of them, whether it's big or small. I mean, most of our concentration is on Facebook and by default Twitter, because we get to cross post from those. So if we tweet, it goes to Facebook. If we post on Facebook, it goes to Twitter. We do have some presence on Instagram, Tumblr as well. But you can go to flameonshow.com, and when you scroll to the bottom, there's a whole bunch of different chicklets. You can click on any of those, and it will take you directly to your favorite social media site where you can follow us. And if you are so inclined, we would love it if you could go to wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review or a star rating, whatever is easiest for you. By doing that, for our show or for any show that you enjoy, it helps new listeners find the show, and we can continue doing what we do for you.
The comic book that we will be starting with is one I have no idea about, but it is a popular property.
It's so popular that a comic shop is doing a contest to win a variant cover of one of them, or if you pre-order, they're doing a pre-order thing where then you can like win the entire set of variant covers.
Ooh.
Because this is going to be, I don't read the Power Rangers comic book, but I've read about Shattered Grid and the fact that it's going to incorporate every single Power Rangers iteration in one comic.
Yep. I have questions.
Yes,
because they also launched that preview like with Jason David Frank.
Yeah.
Like a live action, so whatever Shattered Grid thing, if it also involves like a new Power Rangers show, I don't know who the fuck Lord Drogon.
I love that you're looking at me when you're asking.
Drakengard. Dragnet.
He's
Dragnet.
Ivan Van Ooze.
Jason David Frank.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
But so the whole thing is just kicked off because in the comic, they introduce essentially a version of Tommy that, like, before he gave that long-winded speech of, like, I'm going to join up with you guys, you know. No, he did not. He murdered a couple of them and then decided, you know what, Rita's got a good idea, and proceeded to take over Earth, and then was like, I'm done here. Time to go to some other timeline and fuck with them. And so you're kind of in this weird... area where he was defeated. He no longer has his ranger powers. Some government agency has just kind of tied him up to learn about the morphing grid. And he gets loose and proceeds to walk into the morphing grid to do as much damage as possible.
So you've seen the video that came out?
Yes.
And so that's supposed to be that Tommy?
Yes, that is Lord Draken. That is evil. That is successfully evil Tommy.
Gotcha.
Tommy is the what color?
Green.
He's
and
green.
And then white, and then red, and then
polka dot.
And Lord Draken is, he still has his Green Ranger powers, but instead of the Rangers making the White Ranger to defeat Lord Zedd, they made the White Ranger to defeat Tommy, and he was like, no, I'm going to just take this. And so he's got two coins as of right now that he uses. And he's never not morphed.
What do you do with the coin?
That's just like your little trinket thing. That's like when, remember the show when they were like, Blue Ranger! Or they'd name their animals.
Yeah.
It's the coin that's is the in coin. The little
the
thing.
The morpher, yeah, the morpher sure. concentrates the actual, there's an actual grid, concentrates the grid, which the coin accesses. Like, they go into the whole science of it, which is why I'm nuts about the comic. But, he knows all the specifics of how to fuck with the morphing grid. So it's going to be an interesting.
And he's evil for what motivation?
Just the fact that it's just a version of Tommy that decided to side with Rita instead of, and he taught Rita how humans operate in his timeline. He taught her like, no, you don't have to send a monster every week. just be a politician.
Oh, I did hear about that. Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
That issue was probably fantastic because it was very much in line with the political climate now. Like,
she's trying to make America great again.
She's got some good ideas
about that last name. It's hard to vote Repulsa. You gotta change that to Roberts or something generic.
But they also never mentioned, because she did die in her timeline, but you don't know of what.
Overthrown or just natural causes.
And none of her other minions are around either in his timeline.
No, Goldar, no.
So, and then there's also a really cool side story with Finster kind of left to doing his own thing, which is infinitely more horrifying than anything Reedy could do. He just makes duplicates of people. And just, he's like, maybe they'll turn into a monster. Maybe not. We'll see. And you're like, the fuck, man?
So now, Saban is pushing so hard on the comic book and then the potential TV show. Are they abandoning like the movie? Did that not do well? I don't know.
It did not do well in the world.
So sequel likelihood is probably nil?
It's low. Okay. I really wanted a sequel, but yeah, no, it's low.
Yeah.
Well, but it sounds like you've got a lot of exciting content coming your way if you are a Power Rangers fan, which I am not.
That's all right. You can catch up.
No.
Yeah.
It's like one of the first properties, I think, when I was younger, and I was like, I have no interest in this. I don't know why.
Yeah, for me, that was Rocko's Modern Life. Because it came out after Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
And nothing was going to be as good as Ren and Stimpy.
That just kind of ruined you. I'm just, yeah.
Yep.
So, that's our only indie book. We're obviously maybe not the most caught up on what's the exciting indie comics in the world, but when Oral is back, I'm sure he'll have a few good ones to recommend. Hopefully I will too, but it's been just, yeah. DC's been doing some great work, though. I want to start with something that is very exciting, and I don't know if all of us know this. Have you been paying attention to the Bendis?
No, I thought even the Justice League stuff.
What? No, what?
The entire of the Justice League stuff?
Oh, how they're doing like a whole Justice line and...
Well, they're doing two Justice League teams and one of them has Darkseid on it.
Has Darkseid on it?
Yeah, they announced that yesterday.
Oh, I missed that announcement.
Yep. Well, Darkseid's on the space team.
I mean, Darkseid... is it baby Darkseid?
I haven't said.
Is it like little... Is it going to be like awkward teenage Darkseid?
No, awkward teenage is going and doing the Teen Titans.
Who?
What's his name? Damian Wayne.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
No, actually, that's interesting. So, the, Bendis. Brian Michael Bendis is, yeah.
Well, he's on DC now.
Right, yeah. And he's doing Superman, which we haven't talked about.
Right, he did say, like, he didn't come back for Batman, he came back to one to Superman. Like...
I mean, he came to DC either way, but yeah, that first project that he wanted to pitch, so did you listen to the Word Balloon interview?
Yeah.
Because I guess he had some really serious health issues.
I had heard that.
That, like, I mean, he had, like, a staph infection on his face, and it almost killed him, and all this stuff. Long story short, he's like, I kind of want to do Superman. Can I have Superman? And they're like, well, yeah, sure, why not? DiDio. And
like, what else have you written? I don't know about this. Who are you again?
Well, but best decision they ever made.
Bendis was, because Superman right now is actually really good.
Yeah.
Bendis was like very careful too, because he's like, I don't want to step on anything that people are doing. But they're like, well, it makes sense after the, 1,000th issue. Let's do something different. Let's have a new story. And they're doing it in very similar ways to when Man of Steel. Oh, man. Who's the writer who did Man of Steel? Back in like the 80s? Byrne.
Oh, yeah.
John Byrne. It was a very big moment in Superman sort of relaunching it for the whole thing. And what's funny is Bendis didn't really care about the shorts issue. But they're like, well, do you want the shorts or do you not want the shorts? So they're bringing the shorts back. I'm sure from a Morrison perspective is like, really? Come on. But from the long view that like a Glenn Weldon would espouse, of course they're bringing the shorts back. All things old are going to come back in style.
Right.
The shorts are back in style. So, but what I am interested in is he's exploring some of Superman's sort of Jewish origins, because Siegel and Schuster, I believe both were Jewish.
Yeah.
And there is a certain element of that I think Bendis wants to play with. And supposedly there's going to be some break the internet decision. I mean, he's not going to I don't think he's going to kill off Lois Lane or anybody, but he's going to do something and everyone's going to be like, oh, what'd you do?
Lex Luthor's going to possess Superman.
Yeah, is he going to get circumcised?
He never got circumcised.
Well, how could you?
They fashioned a Kryptonian scalpel.
That's the thing.
I've never considered the uncut or cut version of the process I've thought about because the whole shaving thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that mullet.
Superman is an intactivist. Maybe that's what he's going to do. Anyway, I'm very excited because, I mean, I love Bendis. He's a good writer. And I love Superman. Again, though, it's really good right now. So I'm kind of like, all right, well, we'll see how it goes. But he is also going to be respectful of what's happened in the past. I mean, he talked about all this on the award balloon interview. But yeah, so DC is doing some cool stuff. Specifically right now, Tom King, who is writing like their two best books, I think. Mr. Miracle, which we've talked about ad nauseum, and I won't spend a lot of time on other than to say every issue they've put out is amazing. The last one, I think, have you read any of this?
No.
You really need to read this.
I have not read comic books.
I know, but this is one
quite a long time.
It's going to resonate well with you. You need to read
this
book.
The fuck does that mean?
It's got like that. I don't want to say more than, well, it deals with childbirth, at least this last issue.
He gets somebody pregnant.
Fatherhood. I mean, it deals with relationships. Like, you're going to like
it. Is that
it.
Like my defining trait now that
you are a daddy.
I have a child?
Yes. I like this. Like, you know, most people assume like, oh, you're gay. You must like Cher. And like, you're a straight dude. You like making babies.
You like kids,
here's
right?
a baby.
Or like, this will really identify with you. Like, what? Did I have an older gay brother who left for college? Which part of identifies with me are you referring to? Oh, you got a kid. Oh, the newest thing. Okay. All right.
I want you to read this. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right.
I'll get it for you when it comes out on trade if you don't read it by then.
I mean, I just have access to your Comixology. Just put it on there.
They don't do digital now. It's weird.
What?
DC has been weird about the digital thing. I thought they were going to come out and like, everything's going to have a digital code. No, not everything.
There's
so
been a
weird.
Wait, that's actually happened? Like, they're trying to like push back against digital?
They just have never done a very consistent job with digital. They had a few. I have like a smattering of Comixology, you know, from the bonus code, but not a lot. So it's weird. But yeah, the latest issue, basically Big Barda has a child with Scott.
Okay.
And the whole thing is like, in the waiting room and, you know, dealing with some of the Furies sitting in the waiting room. And like, it's really good. I mean, this comic is probably, like I said, the best thing DC's doing. And it's so not like anything else that you've read or seen in DC that makes it even more special to me. And with the fourth world gods, new gods stuff, it's just, it's crazy.
I'll read it.
You should read it.
I'll read it.
The other book that he's doing is Batman. And that's certainly a little more traditional superhero. But what he's doing with Batman is this thing that I know is pissing off a lot of people and making a lot of people happy, where he's basically going to get married to Catwoman.
Oh, they're still pursuing that?
Oh, yeah. And the way he's, I guess he was talking again on Word Balloon, like he has like a 100 issue commitment. He has some insanely long, which basically now is like a couple weeks, you know?
That was one of the cutest. One of the cutest issues is where they went on a double date.
Yes.
With Superman and Lois. And I was like, I could watch this. I could watch this as a movie. Like,
it was very good.
Just them off doing their thing, and they're just sitting there like, okay, well, I'll be back in a minute. Like,
the most recent arc has Poison Ivy taking over the entire planet through her plant powers.
Okay.
And for ostensibly a good reason, because she's like sick of people fucking it up. So she's trying to like just keep the world healthy and keep people not killing each other. But Batman and Catwoman are immune to it because Batman obviously has some kind of a thing. And, you know, the key to disrupt this plan is to get, what's her name? Crazy.
Harley.
Harley, free of her influence. And because of their relationship, she can kind of, you know, work it out. So it was really good. It was really sweet. And it ended in a way that I didn't necessarily think would be the way they'd end it.
Was it the power of love?
Kind of. Yeah. But it's not saccharine, though.
With Huey Lewis? Okay. Yes, and the news?
That's how it ended.
I would accept that. I will always accept
with
the
those
power
horn
of love
hits.
With Huey Lewis.
And then a freeze frame, which makes sense because it's a comic book. otherwise, I haven't been digging too deep into other DC books. I know they're doing a bunch of stuff with Justice. We're in between issues of the Watchmen Doomsday Clock.
Is that still interesting?
It was. Actually, the last issue, they're muddling more in the DC world with these characters. And they're also bringing characters back from the dead, too.
Oh, good. Is Rorschach back yet?
Nope. But you know who now the new Rorschach is?
Oh.
He's the newspaper sales guy. One that would sell and would read in the Pirate Adventures.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, okay.
Because some time has passed, so he's a little older, but yeah. But no, it's really good, and I'm okay that it's taking a little longer, but it's kind of also like, And then Metal got delayed, too, because that thing is just batshit. Mm. Like, it's just crazy. I don't know if we talked about The Wild Hunt. I know, actually, I think last time we did, like, this whole comic book thing, he was excited for me to read The Wild Hunt, because it actually picks up on some of the threads from Multiversity, and Final Crisis.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
The Ultima Thule and music is the heart of the universe and all this stuff. So they do pick up on a little bit of that and kind of carry that through. And again, you think, oh, they're making it better. They're trying to fix this, and it just goes to shit. Mm-hmm. So like, I love that even though this is like the last, second to last issue, you still think everything's just going to be terrible and badly. So they've done a really good job of like not, you know, oh, nope, the heroes are going to win, and then here's the denouement. It's like very much up to the last issue
to
figure it out.
Their whole thing with Justice League and like the dark, Justice League dark part, they've already kind of tipped their hat a little bit about like the consequences of metal.
Well, the Terrifics is basically post-metal and dealing with the dark universe and all this other stuff.
So, like,
or multiverse.
They mentioned something about like, you know, the it's kind of very much magicians level, where it's like the creators of magic are so pissed at how it's been used that they're going to come back and get rid of it or take it back.
Oh. Yep.
So, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, DC's been interesting. Marvel, I have been reading very little of Marvel lately, just because I read a lot when I travel, and even though I've been traveling, I just haven't always kept up. But Pat is going to talk about some of the X-Men stuff that's been going on, because he's a lot more up to speed than I am.
Astonishing is still really good. They're dealing with the fallout of Xavier coming back and taking Phantom X's place in this universe. Proteus is on a mad quest right now. The big reveals out of the most recent issue is the fact that Proteus, when he was killed back in like 1970, whatever, was only 10 years old. So the X-Men basically murdered a child.
Oh, yeah.
But even though he had basically inhabited, his physical form looked to be of an older, of, you know, an adult. He was only 10 at the time. He basically started to psychically merge and physically merge Xavier and Psylocke, or X and Psylocke. So Warren had to kind of help save Psylocke because Proteus' weakness is metal. His metal wings, you know, was able to kind of get her out. And then old man Logan figured, oh, okay, well, I can do the same thing for X. He took Phantom X's body. I can just stab straight through him. Yeah, X doesn't have Phantom X's body. He just used Phantom X's body to craft this new body. So he almost killed Xavier again, which was delightful. And then Proteus has now taken over, basically taken over a town in Scotland, I believe.
Where Moira's research thing is, maybe, kind of in that area?
Not
Muir Island, but, you know, maybe off the coast.
Yeah, basically takes over this village and gives them the speech about how basically everything exists at all times. It's whether or not it's currently being used. It's almost like your toys. So at this point in time, if you want this thing, he can take it out of storage and make it real. And if he doesn't want it, he can put it away. So basically, they can have whatever they want, which give a town of people whatever they want, and they just start privilege. Killing each other.
Sounds about right.
The purge.
Yeah.
Needful things.
So that's astonishing. X-Men Red is still fantastic. Issue 2 came out. We focus on Trinary. This time around, we get introduced to her, what she's done, and the fact that she basically hacked the bank account of not so great people and redistributed that wealth to where it should go. And Jean and Nightcrawler and their team have to go save her. And it's just, it didn't really play off of the big reveal at the end of the first issue where we find out that Cassandra Nova's back. But it's progressing the story nicely. It'll be good to see where this goes.
And Blue and Gold are still there.
Yeah, Gold. The girls are in jail. Blue. Blue actually is going to start to take a turn for the more interesting, because they've shipped the kids off into space with Poison X. And oh, yeah. Now we have a couple issues without them. And this most recent one is the prelude to this new arc, which is called Cry Havoc. And Emma and Havoc are working with Miss Sinister, Bastion, and Sebastian Shaw.
Oh, Sebastian Shaw.
That guy's still kicking around?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, why not?
I forget. I think there's somebody else in there, like in the main plotting of that. Basically, Bastion wants Miss Sinister's Mother Vine to take effect because it will then restart the mutant population, because this is where all these secondary mutations came from. Like Emma's diamond form is all from this Mother Vine. So Emma and Havoc are apparently plotting to double cross, but Magneto and Polaris are, and these new mutants from Madripoor are trying to stop them. So Magneto goes to find the Hellfire Club in London because, you know, they sent masked, you know, the old foot soldiers out.
The Hellions.
Yeah.
No, that was...
That was Emma's team.
Yeah, that was the young
Emma's
team.
Those
Emma's new mutants that got
slaughtered. The Hellfire grunts.
I always confuse the Hellfire stuff.
No, just those little foot soldiers.
Like mannequin face things.
Yeah.
Magneto comes across Shaw and finds out that Shaw's secondary mutation is that he doesn't have to be hit to take the kinetic energy. He can just pull it out of the air. So that battle's going to start. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because the big reveal at the end is that they find the Polaris is given this amulet or this necklace that was found in Jean's room, and it has Malice in it.
Oh.
So Polaris is now Malice again.
Oh.
So everything old is new again.
Seriously. Retread City is all I'm hearing, but if it's
only
okay.
if Shinobi Shaw shows up at some point.
What about the Thor? Is it just the regular Thor?
No, it's the Mighty Thor.
Mighty Thor.
Mighty Thor 705 came out. We are reaching it's the penultimate issue of Jason Aaron's years-long storyline of Jane Foster as Thor, where she battles the Mangog.
The Mangog.
And kicks its ass.
Sounds filthy.
At the last issue, last couple of issues, she was told that if she transforms into Thor again, that basically she's just signing her own death warrant, because every time she transforms into Thor, all the chemotherapy and treatments that they are doing for her cancer not only are completely negated, but it advances her cancer even more.
Yeah.
So Dr. Stephen Strange, veterinarian, is tending to her in the hospital, because this is before he becomes Sorcerer Supreme again. And tells her that if she transforms again, she's done. That she either has to stay Thor forever or she dies. And she turned Mjolnir away for, I think, an entire issue. Mjolnir just kind of sat outside the window,
sad
floating,
puppy.
Aww.
just looking at her like, hey, aww, I'm here. And then she overhears the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, who's not a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent anymore. I want to call her Roz, but I can't remember her
name. It's Roz.
Is it Roz?
It's Roz, yeah.
Who took her place as the senator in Asgard.
Yeah.
She overhears, not even either that or, what's the dog?
Oh, Bats?
Oh, no. No. God, Thori.
Thorgi?
Thori. No, it's not Thorgi.
Oh, it's Thori?
Thori, yeah.
Yeah.
Loki's old hell dog or whatever.
She overhears the fact that, like, Asgard is being decimated, and then at the end of the last issue, she takes Mjolnir and transforms again, and this time around is basically, it's this last final battle. She tells Freya to get anybody that's still left on Asgardia, and get them, you know, to safety, because Mangog has hurtled Asgardia into the sun, or towards the sun, and then she ends up wrapping the chains that were to bind, was it not Cerberus, the dog, or the wolf, Fenris.
Oh yeah, sorry.
She takes the chains that are meant to bind Fenris and wraps them around Mangog, and then takes Mjolnir and attaches it and basically hurdles him into the sun with Mjolnir bound, and which means that she starts to, her Thor garb starts to disintegrate. It's the one time we actually see Thor without a helmet on.
Yeah, beautiful hair.
And Dowderman did a great job with it.
Dowderman's such a beast.
I mean, all of the art in that Dowderman's done has been amazing. But you know, basically, it's Thor's like, I don't know what to say, and she says, you know, you say goodbye.
Oh, Odin's son Thor is there as well.
Yeah.
And they have a lovely moment. It's they say goodbye, and basically, the next issue's got her on the cover.
The conclusion. It's it's the end of the run.
Dead. Like,
but that scene where they kissed, like, it was the close up, or it was a tighter shot of them kissing as Odinson and Thor, and then it pulls back in the next panel, and it's Thor and Jane, or Odinson and Jane, and then it's just, you know, then the next time you see him, he's just holding the lifeless body of Jane Foster. Aww. And it was like, It's been an amazing journey. I've never thought I would really enjoy a Thor book, and Jason Aaron, his story has been amazing for this entire run, and Dowderman's art has been fantastic to read. So to read the story with that art has been fantastic.
All right, so when does Donald Blake show back up?
Yeah, they addressed Donald Blake a while ago.
Yeah, it's Straczynski's run. It was like,
basically, and I think later too, just totally separate now.
Like Blake was like just the idea that Thor didn't really need Blake anymore, but
basically, yeah.
But still, it was like
weird.
You kind of rehashed that when you did the Jane Foster or Thor.
Well, they did, but it from a different perspective,
right?
But a little bit.
So what we're saying is, by the next run, they're going to craft a new hammer and they're going to give it to Jane, who will be back to life, and they'll call her Thunderstrike.
Well, it wouldn't shock me if they don't absolutely kill Jane, like they put her in a thing. But
it wouldn't shock you.
Call back to
wow,
or the fact that it's the God of Thunder.
Also, like, I noticed, like, when the Jane Thor took over, it was the Thor helmet from, or a very similar design to, when it was the Eric Masterson Thor. It was the
bit
with the visor attached in front and all that. And
they've not shown anything with her in any form, but they have shown in the previews for the new Avengers book, which Jason Aaron is writing, Thor back as the Odin's son, back as Thor with a golden Mjolnir.
Either
Mjolnir is done.
Well,
basically, either
it's done or transforms into that. I don't know which.
I feel like they're gonna, because I mean, I think not just that it's a gold hammer, but he also has a gold arm.
True.
So I think it's gonna be a matter of just, I think somehow, some way, shape, or form, that Mjolnir is kind of.
Man.
It signifies the end of the closing of a chapter.
It could be, yeah. Because they definitely made this Mjolnir, like, sort of sentient and sort of self-aware in certain ways.
It turned into Jane.
Yeah.
It became a person.
It's done some crazy shit. Yeah.
Huh.
So, Jason Aaron's Thor run is going to be epic. I mean, it is epic. It's going to be one of those that for years and years and years, sitting alongside, like, Simonson and maybe Straczynski as well.
Straczynski's wasn't long enough.
No, and it was good, and in a lot of ways it was really good. And Matt Fraction's run I still like a lot. But I mean, this has truly been one of the best Thor runs. And it's ending in that I think someone else is going to pick up the Thor book, whatever they do. But, I mean, Jason Aaron's still going to be writing Thor in Avengers.
So. Right, yeah.
Any other Marvel stuff? And Lockjaw.
Lockjaw. I wanted this book because it's a book about Lockjaw, and while I do not like the art, I'll just even say I really don't like the art. For the most part, when Lockjaw doesn't look like a bulldog of any type, but more like a brown blob with a mustache, it's really awkward. And it starts off very much as a very kind of campy adventure, and just Lockjaw popping around and Medusa going, I wonder where he goes when he disappears. And it's very just kind of whatever. And then they introduce D-Man into the story. And I was not prepared for a study in deep depression. It is intense, honestly. Like, it's, if you haven't read Lockjaw, number one, go read it. It's absolutely kind of ridiculous how good the story is in D-Man's part. And I mean, Lockjaw doesn't talk, so it's, you know, it's more action for him. And I think the conceit of this over the four issues or five issues, whichever it is that he's looking for his brothers and sisters, And we found one. One is left on Earth and is just this adorable little tubby bulldog. That D-Man's neighbor, it was the dog was left on her doorstep, and it's his 30th birthday, because literally 30 years ago this dog was left there. And she is that kooky old woman neighbor who is somewhat words of wisdom and other times a little bit racist or homophobic.
And D-Man is gay, we all know that, right?
I did not know that, but
yeah.
No, I didn't.
I didn't know
yeah,
that
D-Man
either.
Is gay.
He's gay.
He's bearish.
He's.
I knew the bearish thing because you know, look at him.
Yeah, wow. He's more muscle bear. He's definitely got that look to him. He and his husband have split, and he has no powers. He is in a deep depression, and like he. Was the answer to a question on Jeopardy?
Was he really?
In this comic, he was. Okay. He's watching the show and he's eating cereal, and he's the answer to the question. And literally, all three contestants are just dead silent.
Oh,
and Alex Trebek is like, nobody wants to give it a guess, and he starts like he's screaming like you know, D-Man with like the cereal in his mouth, and then he eventually punches the TV.
Oh.
Do we all know about why he's called D-Man? I didn't realize this.
I have no idea.
Wasn't sure for Demolition.
D-Man. Yes, he was Demolition Man when he was introduced, and then the movie was around, I think, the same time, so they had to,
shorten it to D-Man, otherwise they're going to get sued.
I didn't know that. What's his name at the comic shop told me about it.
Well, his costume was very like, you're Wolverine? You have a headpiece like Wolverine? And you have a D on your chest like Daredevil? What?
Yeah.
What are you? And then he was kicked out of the Avengers and nobody really shed a tear.
Yeah.
But he, his sister comes to collect him at the hospital and basically she makes a comment of, we were always kind of worried you'd do something like this. And he's like, what, punched my TV? Oh, well, screw you. And then, like, I showed Eric just one screen grab of one panel and it's,
it was pretty deep. And
it's something along the lines of, I just wanted unconditional love, but without having to work on any of my faults. And I was like, oh. I came here for a lighthearted story about a teleporting bulldog.
Oh, no.
And I'm staying for the depression.
Book dropping truth on you.
But if you, first issue was amazing. By the time this airs, issue 2 should be out. So if you haven't checked it out, check it out. This next issue, we go to the Savage Land and Khazar and the Saber-Tooth Tiger are there. So
very nice. If you have comics that you think we're missing out on, especially indie books, which obviously we are, please let us know on Facebook, Twitter, all the aforementioned social media links. And don't forget to please rate and review us. I know we are switching platforms. We've moved around. Hopefully you're still listening and you found us somewhere else. But, it helps us get our visibility if you do rate and review us on iTunes and the other social media places you can rate and review us.
Tell us how much you love us.
You just have to give us a little, some love.
Or how much you hate us. What?
As long as you're listening.
Just tell us.
We do have one more segment, our one-ups for the week. This is our chance to talk about what is giving us life. I usually save myself for the end, but that's only because I don't know what the hell I want to talk about.
You've
but this week I do.
Saved yourself.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I will go first. I want to talk about a podcast that I was introduced to very recently. Some of you have probably heard of this. It is called The Black Tapes.
Yes.
No one's heard of it except Eric, who I forced to listen to it on our drive to and from Charlotte. Think X-Files and Serial, if they had the Serial podcast, I should say.
I actually had a podcast like that recently, or like the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Similar, but they only had one season.
What's it called?
I don't remember. I got to check. But it was same vein.
So The Black Tapes is ostensibly this serial type investigation into the paranormal activities that come from this series of black tapes. And they're collected by this enigmatic researcher named Richard Strand. And it's basically 2.5 seasons of episodes. And for most of that time, it gets really interesting and deep very quickly into some stuff that I've been interested in, sort of the numerology and the sort of religious elements and Pythagoras and sacred geometry, and like it goes kind of deep and crazy. But I will say that by the end, the writers decided to make a choice that ends the show kind of suddenly, and there has been nothing since, and this ended like late last year. So supposedly there is at least some idea that they may be coming back for more. But if you look up Black Tapes, there's still a good, I don't know, 30 some odd episodes that you can check out and are really good. If you like that kind of thing. And that's sounds, my one up.
Sounds exactly like what happened with mine, where they just kind of ended it.
Well, I mean, and there's speculation as to why, and the production group does this show called Tannis that's still going. And I think some other shows that are interesting, but, yeah, I mean, I'll definitely just put that out there that it's going to be frustrating if you don't like, let's just say, certain types of endings. You may be frustrated, but, you know, it's a good journey. No matter what, it's a good journey. That's my one-up. BJ?
Actually, funny enough, I never thought I would have this as a one-up. I'm going to say me. I have been traveling a lot lately. I went to my grandparents' 60th anniversary. And although I sat inside in the dark setting up my grandmother's computer stuff, it was still really nice to be there. I went to my friend Chris and Eric's wedding in L.A. It was my first time in L.A. I found apparently my style is death and decay because I found a store called Necromance that has like jewelry and stuff made from animals. Yeah, I have a bracelet that's made out of boa constrictor vertebra, and it is my favorite fashion accessory I probably ever owned.
A little creepy.
Yeah, a little creepy, but it won't break me out in a rash because I have a nickel allergy. So if I can't wear anything made out of metal, I will wear things made out of dead things. So it's been a really good past 2 months. Just been a lot of traveling and a lot of hanging out with some really good friends.
All right.
Jeff?
Well, since I didn't talk about it during movies, I'll talk about it now. The Shape of Water. I'll make that my one-up this time. So I got Best Picture and Best Director, and I had to see, because I was already a Guillermo fan, like, what possibly could he have done that was so widely accepted as being, like, award-winning and everything? Because he's always got, like, one foot in the what the fuck.
A little bit.
And this movie is definitely in that vein, but it also makes itself very universal with Unrequited Love and Star-Crossed Lovers, very much a movie that's both classic in like the presentation and kind of like, you know, the design, the sets, but also could be yesterday, you know, could be tomorrow, could be very much any time, you know, just by the way of everything is being portrayed. And it was really touching, and I'm still amazed that that movie came out of him, because it seems very much like he had, like, halfway through the movie, I'm like, this is like he came up with this amazing idea for Abe Sapien in the Hellboy series.
Oh my god, it totally is.
Yeah, but he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, contractually, legally, he just couldn't do
it. But it totally is, in so many ways. Like, if you want that to be your headcanon, it works.
Yeah. So, but it's great. If you haven't seen it, definitely go see it, especially if you're a Guillermo fan. That's why I was okay with buying it, because I love his work, so I was going to want to own it no matter what.
Yeah, and I'll definitely buy it at some point. I agree. And yeah. I think we talked about it. It's beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Deservedly won.
And that's my one-up.
Yes, Eric.
So, my one-up is going to be the ultimate crossover event of the year, which is the new season of The Voice.
Oh, Jesus.
Starring Kelly Clarkson. The original American Idol, which they have gone so far out of their way to never mention the words American or Idol on this show, even though consistently when she's trying to get people to join her team, she's like, I've won a competition show just like this all the time. But it's fun. I love her. She rambles on and on and on, and it's fantastic. And some good singing has come out of it so far.
The rambling, come for the rambling, stay for the singing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Pat.
To quickly touch on yours, another podcast in the similar vein is A Very Fatal Murder. It is the Onion podcast that is a parody satire of Serial and shows of the nature of making a murderer and stuff like that, where you are all of a sudden this big, you know, I know more about forensics than forensic scientists do. And like Netflix released American Vandal, which is a visual satire of that type of thing. This is the podcast equivalent, and it's only six, I think technically seven episodes long. Because there's one, yeah.
Oh, wow.
One episode is, I think, episode five, part one, and episode five, part two. But it's only about an hour and 15 minutes total. It's pretty damn hysterical. At one point, this guy is the host, goes to the town where this girl is murdered and is sitting and talking with the parents, and they're the mother is crying, and he asks her to read a commercial spot. And he's like,
HelloFresh.
Well, none of these are real, but they're right. Very much in that same vein of like the HelloFresh and the Squarespace, and one is like boxes. Like it's weird.
Instead of Squarespace.
It's no, but it's like literally like if you were going to the Container Store.
Oh,
and I think there's one comment he says to her about like, oh no, I. He's like, keep crying. Your sniffles are coming through great on the audio. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous, and it's really funny. But what is giving me life, I could have swore I had something else until this morning when I read an article that said Target is selling this little computer gadget that lets you play the Oregon Trail for $25. And over the course of 6 hours, I went from reading that article and posting it on Facebook to going to the Target website to seeing that the one near us had it available for same day pickup, which means it is available in stock in the store, to going down and driving there and purchasing it for $24.99 plus tax and bringing it home.
Hooray.
It's pretty damn awesome. It is a tiny little screen, but still big enough for you to enjoy it. It has all the hunting, fording the river, and dying of dysentery that you could expect. And it really, it's not like the ports. It's not like, I mean, it really transports you. If you are of a certain age and you remember going to a computer lab class and putting that floppy disk in and playing the Oregon Trail.
Oh, God.
I miss the Apple IIe computers.
Aww.
The best part is that the power button is the little floppy drive.
Aww.
So, for $25, if you are very nostalgic for the Oregon Trail, go buy it.
That is it, I believe, for this week. If you missed out on any of our Drag Race coverage, you don't have to go very far. Just go backwards and forwards in the feed, and you'll get all the RuPaul Drag Race All-Stars and Season 10 coverage you can hope for. Although with Season 10, just so we're all know, we're not doing weekly recaps. We'll be doing a recap or a first episode sort of recap, and then we'll talk about it in our main show. So if you're a Drag Race fan and you're like, "What is all this geeky crap?" Don't worry, it'll be here too. You just have to wade through the rest of the stuff. But that's all we got. So thank you for listening, and don't forget to go rate and review us on iTunes and anywhere else you can. Tell a friend, share that flame on love with all of your friends to steal other podcasts' little exit lines, and we'll see you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.